Hi, welcome to the Landing Spot Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Noe. This show exists to trample all over the idea that feeling exhausted and terrible is just part of being a woman or an aging woman. I am a certified women's health coach seeking to provide women of all ages a safe spot to land as they learn how to truly restore hormone and metabolic health. I will interview leading experts in the field, as well as women who have personally overcome things like stubborn weight gain, exhaustion, irregular cycles, infertility, brain fog, and so much more. It is your time to move from surviving to thriving. Enjoy the show. Hey, thank you so much for joining the show today. I know you're going to get a ton of great information that our guest is giving you. But before we get started, if you are a woman who is suffering from chronic fatigue, terrible sleep, weight gain, skin issues, irregular cycles, anxiety, depression, all of the things that come with hormone and metabolic dysfunction, I would love to see if I can help you. Reach out to me on Instagram, send me a DM, and let's schedule a call to see if I'm the right professional to get you back to where you want to be. And that is thriving. Ladies, we are not meant to be barely hanging on, no matter what age we are. We are truly created and designed to thrive. I want to help you through some simple lifestyle interventions achieve that. If I'm not the right person for you, I have a ton of connections in this field all over the US. And I would love to connect you with one of those so that you can truly live your best life. Reach out. It's at Allison Health Coach Noe on Instagram. We'll include that in the show notes. And now y'all enjoy the show. Hey, and welcome back to the Landing Spot Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Noe, and I am super stoked about today's guest. We have just had some really fun conversations in passing, and I can tell that this girl has done the head work. It's so important when we are looking at our health, and I think most of us want to look at markers that are easy to gauge. So how do I lose weight? How do I sleep better? But if we are not working on our mindset and our mental health and emotional intelligence levels, then oftentimes we find ourselves in that hamster wheel of dieting and failure. I actually was listening to a really interesting podcast earlier this week that talked about the failures of any sort of addiction, and dieting can be one of those. It gives us a dopamine hit when we fail. So it's almost as addicting to fail at a goal as it is to participate in other addictive behaviors. So anyway, I say all that to say, I really am excited to dig in with you, Rebecca, about just your journey overall, because I have seen the fruits of your work that you've done as far as your mental health and emotional intelligence. So Rebecca Turner is joining us today. She is a multimedia registered dietitian. She has radio shows. She's really all over the place in Mississippi, and we call her our resident celebrity. I know she hates that title, but I think it's fun. Rebecca, we mentioned in the pre-show convo that I like to give listeners something right off the bat, just some piece of value or a tool that they can add to their health toolkit. So it is the holidays. I don't know if you want to utilize that, but what is something, just a good solid piece of advice that you would give to any woman who is wanting to make a change in their health status?
The first thing you would need to do is change your mindset from or to taking care of your body, not perfecting your body.
That's great.
And that is a shift that I think so many of us want, we need, but we really don't know how to get there, because the only sort of representation of good health in the wellness industry in the West is ways to perfect our figure or to change our outward appearance. And really, those don't have anything to do with health. I would also say that another thing, and I'm all about like getting down to the roots of it. And it's so I want you to be honest with yourself. Do you really want to be healthy? Are you using that as a masquerade for really wanting to look good naked? Because those are two totally different things. I'm not saying that you can't be healthy and look good naked. I'm asking you, which do you want more? Because when you know what's motivating you and when you can be honest with yourself, then you can start to better identify maybe why some of your patterns of behavior aren't lining up with the mental health that you think they should, or even with the results that you want. Because if it's true, honest health that you're seeking, your relationship with food, exercise, yourself, sleep, some of these other things will look differently. If you're purely just really wanting to look good naked, you will abuse your body at all cost and sacrifice a lot of mental health to get there. And that's not health. And that's okay. You just need to be honest with yourself before the other work can be done.
I think that is the most valuable piece of information that anyone who is wanting to make some changes can get. Honesty with ourselves is one of the hardest things to put into play because we haven't been taught what that even looks like. You know, growing up, we just live in a culture where it's go and do and chase this. And now with social media being so prevalent, man, if that was available other than MySpace when I was growing up, I don't even want to think about where I would be. Yeah. But that honesty with yourself, and this is something that I tell my clients quite often, if your main goal is to look good in a bathing suit this summer. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong for having that goal, but I can tell you that it becomes much easier when you are in a situation where you have to make a decision about what you're eating and how you're sleeping, you know, all of these daily decisions that we're making. It's a lot easier to be like, you know what? I'll look good in a bathing suit next summer. It's not worth it. But if you are facing major health adversities, you're seeing your all of a sudden you're on hypertension medication, your A1C is up, and you're hearing the words prediabetes, which means that your pancreas has been suffering for about 7 years at that point, or you're struggling with infertility. When your motives are much greater than your physical appearance, I think that offers a lot more commitment usually.
I would agree with that. And I would underscore too, that even if you make it to the level of outward appearance that you desire, here's when you know that maybe you got there in squirrely ways that are going to be detrimental to your mental health, because then you spend the next however long terrified you're going to lose it. And so once you reach that pinnacle of looking good in your bathing suit or looking good naked, as I just like to throw it out there and say, then you wrestle with the fear of that going away, because all of your self-worth has been wrapped up in that picture perfect sort of version of yourself. And then I'd also like go back and say, I've worked with many women over the years who are pre-diabetic, who may have uncontrolled diabetes, who have PCOS, who are on the weight cycle up and down. And the reason they keep failing is not so much that they don't want to care for themselves, but they've been shamed to the point that they think if they can't make themselves smaller, then it's not working. And so we have to change the conversation also, that weight is not the end-all be-all sort of metric of better health. In fact, it could be the last metric for health. And until you disassociate with that being some form of, I guess, metric that has to be measured, then you can't fully care for yourself, because then you're competing with two different things. I would also say those that have a lot of underlying health issues and they haven't been able to actually care for themselves the way that their doctors can understand why. Like, you know, it's hard for someone who's in a different space to say, you have diabetes, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you watch your blood sugar? Why wouldn't you do this? Why wouldn't you do that? Well, for many women, there's a lot of underlying trauma that's connected to their food choices and their relationship with their body. And until they connect those dots and heal other wounds, then they're never going to recognize why it is they feel like they can't eat healthy foods, or why food makes them happy, or why they can't stick with anything. You know, mental health, the research around mental health is exploding right now, that's connecting it to metabolic health. So when you have metabolic disorders and also depression, anxiety, and some of these other chronic mental health, instead of saying they're two separate things, you can almost wrap them into one. And so if you think about it, the cells of the brain are the same cells in the pancreas, the same cells in your liver, the same cells in your heart. And if they're dysfunctional and maybe sick or not to their best, then your brain's not going to be either. So we have to stop separating sort of the two, and you have to look at it as more, well, I need to care for the things that are causing my body harm. And some of that is just unresolved traumas, unresolved other issues that we may have with our mental health. And we don't need to put them in two different compartments. They need to be kind of looked at in a holistic approach.
Most definitely. We talk quite a bit about maladaptive coping mechanisms, and most adults don't realize that they are acting out of trauma. And this affects everything from our health to our relationships to, I mean, everything. I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned. If your goal is to look good in a bathing suit and then you get there and then you're always worried about losing it, I have been in that cycle over and over again. She's raising her hand. She has too. I remember when I first started to lose weight, it was not long after I got sober. So I drastically changed my life in a million different areas. But I got a lot of positive feedback from the shift in my weight. And then I started running cross country. I was 30, but my teammates were 20. And I got down to the smallest I'd ever been in my life. And I was fast, but I was never happy with myself, ever. My entire self-worth was wrapped up in how I looked and how fast I could run. And I've gained that weight back and lost it. And, you know, I did this dance, and it's something that I think I will always have to work on. But now being able to experience true healing and let that be my main goal. What do my hormones look like? How do I feel? How am I sleeping? Rather than, I mean, I've taken the batteries out of my scale and put it up. It was misery because that day would be dictated on what was on, what number was on that scale, whether I was building muscle, no matter if I was in week four of my cycle. You know, there are so many things that can contribute to that up and down movement. So that really is something to think about, ladies. It matters why you're doing what you're doing. And there is nothing wrong with wanting to look a certain way, but your goals, the way you approach it, everything about that is going to be different. And then you have to realize too that the way that our bodies respond to exercise and nutrition in our 20s looks very different than it does in our 30s. Then again, very different than it does in our 40s. And then once you hit that post-menopause, you know, then things level out and you can pretty much bank on that's how it's going to be. But until then, there are just these major shifts and your body's going to change, not for the worse. It's just different. And
it's just change.
Yeah.
It's just what our bodies were made to change. Nothing was ever made to stay the same necessarily. We're the only ones that want to freeze things into time. Mm-hmm. I saw a post you made about versus anti-aging versus aging well, as if, you know, making it around the sun, you know, for decades is some kind of like bad thing. I mean, we have this very distorted relationship with our outward appearance here in the West. And, you know, as a believer, I am convinced, you know, as a Christian, that one of Satan's or the devil's or the ego's or whatever, however you want to label it in your perspective, his biggest accomplishment is the wellness industry, right? Because what he can't destroy, he'll distract. Mm. And a life-changing verse for me personally, for my own personal journey, was John 10:10 that said the thief comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. And so oftentimes we think that something that evil is out for our country or out for, you know, our kids or our marriage, or he's out for maybe our health in a bigger respect from like cancer or traumatic car wrecks or whatever. But thieves by nature, you have more petty thieves than you have mass shootings, or you have these, you know, 9/11s, right? All across the world, you have petty theft every single day. And so to me, if the devil can come and petty thief your joy, then he's winning. And so for women in the West, it's whether you're showing it or not. If you get on the scale and it dictates your day, if you look in the mirror and you're disgusted, what you see, if you go into your closet and you have a hissy fit, if every time you walk into a room, you're judging yourself against another woman or somebody else, if you lay down at night and the only thing you say or talk about yourself is how stupid and fat and ugly and old and wrinkly you are, or if you spend all of your discretionary income, every cent of it, on trying to anti-age or shrink yourself, he's winning. You are not living in any form of joy at all, none, bar none. And so when I really connected that dot, when I really recognized that maybe I wasn't broken, I wasn't the one that was the problem, something else was fighting against me, then it shifted for me. It just shifted. It was like, nope, not today, Satan, in a lot of different ways. And we all have that sort of conversation in our head. And when I work with eating disorder patients and those who are truly suffering from eating disorders, there's a term within recovery there is your eating disorder voice. And so, of course, as a faith-based person, I know who the master of that voice is, but we all have that voice. It may not take us to that sort of extent, but it's the one that's fighting against you. It's your inner critic, right? And when you can disassociate yourself from that voice and you can start to analyze it and ask it questions and then combat it, then you are in a better position to make better decisions, may have better whys for the things you to do. And then you can start to question your old habits, routines, or who is doing the motivation. You know, another good tool to do when you talk about, yes, Rebecca, I've been told this all the time. Of course I want to be healthy, but I wouldn't mind losing a little weight too. And I'm like, okay, I get that. And then I'm like, but why? And I mean, whatever you say is fine. And then if it's like, well, I just want to feel better about myself, why? I just, you know, I just finally want to show my friends and family I can do it. Why? You know what? I just want to give the middle finger to my dad who poked fun at me for being fat from 10 to 15 to 25 or whatever, right? Usually it takes three whys to get you down to, and you have to be honest. It's an honest, this is honest assessment. So why do you want to lose weight? But why? Okay, but why? And then you can really get down to like, oh man, okay, it's a little bit deeper than that. For me in my journey, I mean, when I got down all the way to the why, I had some pretty unfortunate relationships that happened my first year or two of Southern Miss. And it took me a long time to realize that my disordered eating and my anorexic-like behaviors and control issues were all about controlling the chaos because I couldn't control the harm that was done to me. And so it was never about necessarily looking good naked. Yeah, that felt validating. I loved being in a certain size, but it was all about controlling that size and controlling everything that went in and controlling every exercise that went out. And I felt safe because I was in full control. I could walk into a room. I could not eat the cake and I walked out with a badge of honor because I could do that. Nobody was going to do that to me. And so it took a lot of work to recognize, you know, I was punishing myself or being oppressive to myself as a way to feel in control and safe. But really all I was doing was ruining my life. I mean, and my health and my mental health and everything else. So, you know, letting go of that control and finding full joy. I mean, it's still an ongoing process, but gosh, I don't wish that hell on anybody.
What was it that allowed you to recognize what was going on and helped you shift out of the more oppressive behaviors into more positive behaviors?
So I remember finally meeting my husband to be, or now I've almost be 18 years next year, 17 years, I think. Yeah, whatever. Long time. And we were engaged to be married. He was a completely different person than I'd ever dated before. I mean, I just knew he was the one. Anyway, and I was the one who masqueraded my disordered relationship with food and myself on the halo of health. I was a dietetic student. I ran, I ate. I wasn't so restrictive that I was classified, I'd be classified as anorexic due to body weight, but I had safe foods. That's the term that is used in the eating disorder community. Safe foods. And I had willpower, like ironclad willpower in terms of what I would or wouldn't eat and when I would, wouldn't eat. I was sitting on his lap. We were looking through some wedding stuff. We were planning our wedding and he joked something about when we were going to do the cake tasting. I bursted into tears and he was like, babe, what's wrong? And I started crying and I said, I'm going to have to eat cake in front of people. It's part of your wedding. You have to eat cake in front of people. And just the thought of not being in control of that or like having to do that, like sent me over the edge. And he was like, oh, okay. Are you okay? And I was like, oh, wow. Like, this isn't good. Like something in me recognized, like, I want to eat cake on my wedding day. I don't want to have to think about burning that off. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to be that person. And so that's when the ship that it was no magic overnight. Oh, okay. But that was like a distinct moment that I was like, whoa, Rebecca, like you've crossed the line. Like this is a problem. And slowly but surely, ups and downs and all arounds, you know, as life would have it, things and having that supportive, him being supportive and not totally freaked out about, because he watched me from when we first started dating. And being in a good relationship is very triggering when you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And so looking back now, it's all hindsight 2020. I'm much more able to sort of see it. But our thing to do on Friday nights was to go to Chili's for 2-for-1, right there in Hattiesburg, Pine Belt People, USM to the top. I don't know if they still do it, but they used to. And I would order a grilled chicken salad and then I'd have my two glasses of wine. And as it went over, it went from grilled chicken salad to side salad, no chicken, to side salad, no chicken, no cheese. And then he just started saying, whatever. And so my restriction was just getting slowly but surely a little, you know, because I wanted the next level. I wanted a little bit, you know, more. I was willing to sacrifice whatever. And yeah, so I owe him a lot for just loving me through it in that way and showing me unconditional love and support no matter, and never connecting his love for me ever for whatever I looked like ever. I've always been more harder on myself about that than, you know, he's ever been. And that's what I needed.
Yeah. Positive relationships are a game changer. And something else that I feel that I have noticed is a cyclical behavior with negative relationships. So it's almost undoubtedly tied to our relationship with ourselves. And it's almost as, if not as much, addicting as, you know, our food behaviors. But when we don't love ourselves, we seek out people to validate that we're not worthy. And I think that it is by the grace of God that we get to a point where that person steps in and says, no, like, I love you because you're you. And if it's not a spouse, you know, our parents, if it's not a parent, there will be someone that can step in and the Lord will use them to validate who you are in God, and not all of these crazy things that we come up with through all the different little micro traumas or major traumas in our life. So I appreciate you sharing that. So you mentioned that you still have daily work. I think we all do. It's really important that we are intentional to give ourselves space to make sure that we are staying in some sort of healthy habit, because we can very easily backslide. So what are some of the things that you tend to on a regular basis that help you stay in a healthier mindset?
You know, I mean, it almost sounds contradictory, but like fitness was also, or I guess sort of like extreme sport was a catalyst too for my healing as much as it was for some of my peaks and valleys, if that makes sense. And so when I got married, I was the person who signed up for my first half marathon. I got married in October. I signed up for the Blues Marathon, half marathon in January, because I didn't want the wedding to be the only reason why I was working out. I needed something past the, you know, past the honeymoon, which is just so ridiculous. But anyway, it was the first time I can still remember the first time I ran like 4 miles and then 5 miles and 6 miles. And I cared about running more than I cared about not eating. And so marathon running or half marathon running was the first thing in my life I cared about more than how I looked. And so I really started getting very interested in eating for performance. Food had another purpose. It just wasn't a necessary evil. It became a tool for the other goal that I wanted, right? And so that really helped project me in a more positive way. But it still wasn't normal or natural. I mean, yes, I was eating and I was running marathons, but I was only eating what was necessary to get me to complete the goals that I wanted, which led me to sort of like that next phase of my life, which was trying to have children. And for me, and I'm getting to answering your question, I'm going a long way, but it took us a little bit of time to get pregnant. And I wasn't fully honest with my OB. We never did fertility drugs. I wasn't sure that I was fit to be a mother, so I needed it to happen naturally for me to be on board with it. But I was significantly underweight. And later, after talking to my OB and coming clean years later for my second one, it made perfect sense. I wasn't having regular periods. I mean, it was completely due to my lifestyle. But when I got pregnant with Neely, I realized like something in me was like, you cannot screw this up. Like, you will punish yourself. You will self-harm yourself with food and exercise. I mean, I was never a self-harmer in that way, but restrictive and strict training. You can't do this to this miracle. Like, this is something that has been given to you. And that was the first time I cared about something and someone more than I cared about my training or my whatever was my pregnancies. And my two pregnancies, those are the 20 months out of my entire life that I've had the most healthy relationship with myself and my body, because it had a bigger purpose. And I say all that to get back now. So I exercise because it it brings me physical release and joy, but it's my kids watching my daughter move through. She's now 10 and going through some changes and whatever. And I had someone floor me one time and say, you're never fully mentally well until you're willing to pass on your mental health to your children. If you wouldn't want the way you think about yourself or you live to your kids, you still got work to do. And so if I can do anything to keep her from going through the decade of and a half, and then still I'm almost 40 years old and I hadn't got my shit together. So like if I can help figure it out so I can keep her from having to go through the same, then that's what keeps me doing the mental work. That's what keeps me sharing the story. That's what keeps me coming up and not bullying, but just questioning people on like, why do you really want whatever you say that you want? Because I want it different for our kids. I just want my two girls to have the freedom to have other aspirations than looking good naked. Mm-hmm. And so really, they are a daily reminder that how I treat myself matters because they see it.
It is crucial that mamas think about this, especially if you have daughters. I realized how much of that was passed down to me. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, and she's absolutely stunningly beautiful at 93 years old. She still worries about her size and somewhat due to health. She wants to stay around a long time, but also, you know, it's aesthetics. And my mom has been the same way. My mom has always been stunningly beautiful. She didn't struggle with her weight like I did. But it was always a concern of hers. And so I picked up a lot of that about how I felt about myself based on, you know, a lot of these measurements that I saw the important women in my life using to measure their value. And they never recognized that they were doing it. They never said ugly things to me. It's just ingrained in us. I'm sure that was passed down, you know, from there. Obviously, it's generational. And I'm so pleased to hear that that is a main motivator for you. I have seen many of my friends obsess over their appearance, and their daughters are with them all the time witnessing their punishment. They're using exercise to punish themselves for eating things. And goodness knows I have been there. When I was a distance runner, I developed a very unhealthy relationship with food because I would train for a marathon so that I could binge on Friday nights because I knew Saturday mornings were my long runs. And where at first it was because I was actually pretty, you know, decent distance runner, then it became more about how I could use that to eat more food because when I got rid of drugs and alcohol, food very much became my coping mechanism, and so did other sports. And I'm glad you brought that up. I do want to go back to that in just a minute. But the generational health, it's a huge desire of mine to help women learn about their bodies and their cycles so that they can teach their daughters, because this is something that we are not taught anywhere else. We're not taught by our physicians. We're not taught in school. We're not taught by our mamas because they didn't know. And this will create generational health. And another thing that I've noticed is when my clients decide it's time for them to get healthy, the entire family benefits. Their husbands lose twice as much weight, you know, you know how that goes, but it is just as important that generational health also applies to the mental and emotional health. So what a brilliant point that you made. And I really hope that this will spark some thought processes in women when they are thinking about these things, saying bad things about their bodies and themselves in front of their daughters, being too restrictive. You know, there's a time and a place. If you are treating disease from a holistic approach and using nutrition to help eradicate disease in your body, there may be a time where you need to avoid foods that are promoting that disease. But again, it goes back to what you said. Be very honest with yourself. Is this truly what you're doing? And the women that I've worked with, that is truly what they are doing. They have come out on the other side far healthier mentally and physically than I ever even could have imagined. And to be honest, I think they're probably healthier than I am in many ways. It's just such a beautiful process how God uses my clients to inspire me and to teach me every single day.
Sometimes it's really hard right now to be a dietitian, I'll tell you that, because there's just so much misinformation, but there's also so many different mindsets. Not everybody has had the same kind of clarity or just shift in perspective as some of us have, which is sad because we have the same education. But, you know, it's not about, I get asked sometimes, oh, you just let people eat whatever they want to, that and whatever brings them joy or whatever. And I'm like, you're under the assumption that people can't be trusted with food, because that's what we've been taught for, you know, entire whatever, is that we can't be trusted. We haven't stopped to ask people who, you know, are scarfing down Ho-Hos and fast food and all that why they're doing it. I can guarantee you none of them are happy or it brings them joy. Mm-hmm. It's connected to something else. It's the fact that they don't feel on a fundamental level worthy enough of nourishing themselves, or they don't look at it that way with proper food and exercise. We have created this dichotomy in our media that if you're on a diet or you're eating fruits and vegetables or plant-based or whatever it may be, then you're being punished, mm-hmm. right? Because think about the marketing. Think about what Coke does. You open happiness. Think about what a happy meal is. There is this very sophisticated marketing out there that says we are entitled to fried foods, fast foods, sugary foods, desserts. We should all be skinny cow. What a dichotomy that is in terms of the branding and the marketing and the imagery that they use, that you can still enjoy their product and then be what is supposed to be larger cow, but skinny, right? And so we are fed the lie that we can have it all and eat it too, per se, or that we should want it, or that we're entitled to it, right? And so many women come to me bitter as hell about broccoli. I'm like, whoa, what did broccoli ever do to you? And it's because we're looking at it as punishment, mm-hmm. as we are somehow broken and we've been sent to the bad table and we're going into timeout until we can get our shit together. And, you know, instead of looking at it from a completely different perspective as I get the opportunity to nourish myself, I get the opportunity to provide myself with all of this wonderful, these wonderful properties. And also food also includes enjoyment. So when you feel like you can trust yourself, you can have the double chocolate cake slice and leave it and feel joy and not guilt or shame, because you know that you had a slice, it's over. You don't have to have the whole pie. It's just food. You'll see it again the next, you know, like it's a completely different approach. Here's another thing I want to say when you talked about your specific clients may be of all different ages and stages. Two things I want to say to maybe the perimenopausal, menopausal group. Number one, baby boomer women, that would be women of the age like 50, 60 now, I guess a little bit older, is the fastest growing sector of eating disorder patients in the U.S. right now. Because your 50s and 60s are not our grandparents' 50s and 60s. You still want to look good. You still have the health capacity to go and travel and find love and do all the things, right? But you aren't taught necessarily how to take care of yourself in terms of exercise and diet. So the only thing that generation knows to do is to eat less. And so they are the fastest growing sector finding themselves in eating disorder recovery clinics, because they just keep eating less until they're in full-blown anorexia or binge eating disorder, because they don't know. So that's number one. And then the second thing I would say to necessarily that generation is, you know, well, I lost my train of thought, to be honest. I was like, there's two things I want to say. But the main thing is to sort of recognize that and then know it. Full, and maybe we'll come back to you in full mode with that. But if you're feeling sort of like that swirly around in your head, or you feel like you're slipping and sliding, you need to ask for help and to get it. Oh, this is it. The other one. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Jesus. So sometimes our spouses, even loving ones, can make us feel like they love us or are less attracted to us for the way that we weigh. And bitterness is another one that I think keeps so many women from achieving their goals. So I had a lady come to me. And she was so pissed she had to be there. And her husband loved her, stuck with her, encouraged her, all the things. And she looked at me dead in my face and said, why in the hell do I have to go through all this trouble so he gets what he wants? Think about that. Okay. On the other side, I had a young woman. She was 17 at a prestigious school here in Central Mississippi. Her mother brought her to me. Her mother was one picture perfect, all the things, everything we just talked about. And she came to me for anorexia. And she said, "I'm hungry, but me not eating is the only thing that pisses my mother off." Mm. Her being sick, she knew, disrupted her mother's perfect whatever. It was her way of acting out. She could control the situation. All right. Bitterness. I said, "Sweetie, we got other ways we can get back to our mama. Let's eat our supper." Right. But if she went to the table and was a good girl and ate a balanced meal, then mom was happy and forgot about her. Okay. If wife eats her fruits and vegetables, goes and does all the exercising, lose all the weight, husband's happy. Now they shows her more affection and attention. Bitterness, right? So until it's almost like we hold our health hostage as a weapon against other people, or not against ourselves, because why should they get what they want and me have to suffer for it? And I'm saying that's greater. Those issues are greater than your relationship with food. And that is a main scenario of asking yourself why three times. Because if you just tell me you don't like broccoli, and then we get down to the fact that you feel like you're being punished so your husband will find you attractive, well, shit, that ain't got nothing to do with broccoli. Mm-hmm. So until you want to be healthy and care for yourself for you and throw the middle finger up to whoever else, and you want to put in the work for you, you will never do it. Or you will never do it with joy.
Right. That is something that I think that any health coach, fitness instructor, any sort of coach or professional in the wellness space could benefit from, the three whys. And it's hard.
But they have to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it has to be honest. Yeah.
And you have to be, we have to be as professionals in this space, okay with being uncomfortable. Because mm-hmm. we've got to ask questions that are inevitably going to make potential clients uncomfortable or patients uncomfortable. But again, if we're not getting down to the root of it, then we're just taking money and we're not helping anything. We're probably contributing to the problem.
Because then they're going to say either Allison's a fluke and her program doesn't work, or I just proved it to myself again. I'm broken. It's me. I can't do mm-hmm. it. Neither one of those is right. Like, you know. It, well, I mean, you know, sometimes some programs are broken, but for the most part, but I'm just saying some are, but it's not you. Like, that's what I want you to see. Like, it's not you. And why is it that we question ourselves? Like, women, if the relationship fails, or if the diet fails, or if our ass gets bigger or whatever, we question ourselves. And how did we fail versus maybe the man wasn't just a good fit, or the diet was too restrictive, or God knows what else is going on. Like, why do we always just self-absorb? Mm-hmm. Well, we're the problem. Mm-hmm. Like, we go, that's our first defense.
It is. It's something that I have learned more so in the last year and a half to make sure that I'm communicating with my clients. If we're in week four and this is not working for you, or even week two or three, and you are constantly in a shame spiral with what we've got programmed for you, dude, let's talk, because there are many other approaches that we can take. And just as you have pointed out, everybody's trauma is different. Everybody's home life looks different, work environment, stress levels. There are all these things at play, and there are options for you that will work, but we've got to communicate. And like you said, be honest with ourselves and get out of this shame spiral, because if we want to continue to be the victim, we will be inevitably.
Yeah. And another question that you're going to have to ask yourself, if you really want to like get to the other side of like using food appropriately as a form of care or even a form of joy, for either restrictors or indulgers, whichever way you go, you are using food as some form of coping mechanism, either mm-hmm. to make yourself feel better through restriction, which my God, it can make you feel strong and in control and in power, to you eat everything but the kitchen sink because you know, you sort of had a bad day. Here is the underlying work that you and I must learn. We have to learn to deal with our emotions without food. Mm-hmm. Like, You have to learn to deal with emotions without food. And so like in drug and alcohol, right? Like one of the things is, you know, how do I get through a crappy day without a drink? Or you see someone in recovery post, you know what, I made it through a really hard season and I didn't succumb to using again to cope through the feelings, right? Like they are actually having to detach from the want to cope with that emotion with the thing that they're used to. You've got to figure out a way to go through a hard day without Oreos, like you're going to have to figure out a way to go through a hard season without being so hard on yourself in terms of restriction. Like it's just as hard for a restrictor to let go of the reins as it is for a binger to reel them in. Mm-hmm. And so that's why there's no one size fits all, because everybody looks different with their dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Everybody's dysfunction's different. And, you know, in the great words of Dr. Phil, it could solve a lot of people's problems. One of his one-liners is, well, how's that working for you? Mm-hmm. You know, like, and there's an honest statement for you too. Like, so how's this working for you? Mm-hmm. Like, are you really getting the fruit in your life that you want? If the answer is no, then something's not working for you either, you know, in either way. And for me, it really wasn't working. My hair was falling out. I wasn't getting pregnant. I had to get married first, but I wouldn't eat cake in public. You know, my entire mindset was wrapped. I thought about food from sunup to sundown. That's just not the life I wanted.
It takes a certain level of, I don't know if just age and life experience. One of the most freeing things for me in the past, I don't know, it's probably, I've been on this journey a long time, and I would just say the last 3 or 4 years, where I've really been able to look at food and turn down XYZ, because if I eat this, I will feel like shit tomorrow. I will have terrible anxiety. Right. I won't sleep well, and it not be weight motivated. But it, so I point this out to say that there are things that you can do to get to that place. And when you restore your body to, I always say, back to the way God created it to run, you can feel what these foods do to you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a 48-hour, you know, ordeal, depending on, I suffered quite well the next day after Thanksgiving, but I had planned it. And I knew that the following day, my schedule was light and I was going to be outside and walking and just kind of grounding myself and doing all these things. So you can get there, but I will tell you the first 8 years of my journey, when I was, you know, sober-minded and quote unquote working on my health, I did not have that distinction. It was all appearance motivated, 100%.
But I would also say in your journey, that got you over another hump that was unhealthier. Mm-hmm. So like even for me, I look back, you know, and I don't think, I mean, God can deliver people from things instantly. I get that. But there's a lot more folks that worked at it in the Bible than there are miracles. That's why they're miracles. And, you know, for me, I had to have the obsession with running to get me out of the spiral of anorexia, right? And then I had to have the want to have a child to get me out of the ring. It was progression. My journey over the last 20 years has been progressive of where I've gotten to freedom now. Like it wasn't like I sat on my husband's lap and cried and knew that I was screwed up, you know, as a sprayed roach, and then just clicked and it got better. There were things in my life that just sort of helped to pull me out of the muck and the mire bit by bit, and sort of was what I needed, you know, at the time. And as I do get older and wiser and have these children and these life experiences and better understand my emotional and spiritual health for sure, I catch my triggers a whole lot quicker. I'm not out of it. Like I'm still human. I still want to look attractive and feel good. And I have fitness goals. So I'm always using my own tools and tactics with myself. I'm definitely not on cloud nine all the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm much more stronger in my whys and then what I'm not willing to let go of. I know what freedom feels like. I know what fajitas with the actual flower ripe taste like. And I'm just not, you know, I'm not going back to that prison. And every time I start to slip or sort of question, or because if I get in a stressful time, we're right now, we're building a house, we're in, or whatever, my go-to is control. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind myself that doesn't fix anything, that makes things worse. And so in the spiritual journey with me being control, the biggest lesson I'm learning to grow closer to God is detachment. Mm-hmm. And allowing him to, like, being okay with, like, not being in control, and trust, true trust. Mm-hmm. And when I can get back to that space, that's when that peace that passes understanding comes. And, but I mean, sometimes I have to do that 5 times a day, and then sometimes I'm good for the whole week or two. So, I mean, you know, I'm still a basket case. It's just, I'm a more functional one, I would say. And because here's the other thing, Allison, I think is really important to share. And I feel like I'm taking over your whole podcast, but, is just, I think it's such a disservice for any health professional on any platform, fitness, whatever, to make you feel like there is some sort of light at the end of the tunnel, flip the switch on, life's good. That is a lie. And that is the same thing with, like, eating disorder recovery. Clients, parents ask all the time, I just want them to eat and let's be done with this. Sorry, they're going to deal with this for the rest of their life. Addiction, you are, I think you mentioned 8 years or however many years sober and clean. That's phenomenal, but it's still a work. And like you're going to put those tools to work for the rest of your mm-hmm. life, right? Like, I mean, so the idea that those of us who are high functioning in recovery of whatever it is that brought us to our lowest, it's not like you just, wah, and then it's always like that. Mm-hmm. It's peaks, it's valleys, it's you, but it's you, it's having a toolbox. Mm-hmm. And keeping it close and pulling it out and having a quick draw on when you need it and where, and a support system. And then you get over those bumps really quickly. And then, you know, you move on with your life. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to be honest that I think we talked about this one day at the gym. It's not about trying to squish bad or hard emotions. It's learning how to manage them. Mm-hmm. And then when you can learn how to manage the waves and ride them, then you realize they come, they go, it's going to be seasons. And then it's not like you're, you know, there is no perfect mode for a perfect life. It's all up and down all around. And when you accept that, like when you accept that, then I think you just are better. Like, okay, well then it's just going to be a war till I die, but you will be stronger on your side of it. You know, the more that you put your tools to work and the more you keep looking for new tools or different ways of getting what you really want, which I think everybody wants to be living in joy and with good health. So I think that's something we can all agree on.
For sure. The idea that you will reach this goal and that be that is insane.
Right. And it's false information.
The
fake news.
Clients that focus solely on the outcome do not get to their outcome, because every day is dependent on being a certain weight or looking a certain way. Well, they're not taking the time to invest in the journey. And that's where everything changes, is in the journey. You learn the emotional responses that we have that you mentioned are, I was so driven by my amygdala, that emotional response center of my brain, for most of my life. And that made the decisions for me. And I watched this happen with my father, and I thought, oh, he's so emotional. And he even told me one time, you're so emotional. And I was like, where do you think I get it from? You know, we were just very emotionally charged. And just to echo what you said, one of the most powerful things that God has done for me in my life is to show me that most of the time emotions aren't real. They are valid. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And this is that conversation that you and I had. It's okay that XYZ makes you feel jealous or makes you feel insecure or makes you feel whatever, sad.
Triggered. Even if you get triggered.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's okay and it's normal. And to deny that this causes this feeling in you does you no good. Now, what will you
do? What do you do?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Like, okay, this makes me feel terrible. What will make me feel good? Getting outside and walking, calling Rebecca and talking to her, whatever. But what will make me feel even worse?
Spiraling.
Yep. My old coping mechanisms. And mm-hmm. so I think the theme that keeps coming up in this podcast is just being real with yourself, being honest with yourself, you have to start there. You have to start there. You have to take responsibility for your health. It's not your doctor's job. It's not your nutritionist's job. It's not your spouse's job. It is your responsibility. And back to what Rebecca said, if it's not something that you truly want, you're not.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You don't owe me your health.
Right, right. But,
you know, and I think there's so many that, like, I had someone come to me again. She just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And I just finally looked at her and I said, you don't have high blood pressure. You don't have high cholesterol. You're no diabetics, whatever. You're fine. Like, yes, you've got a few pounds you'd like to lose. And I just looked at her and said, you do realize you don't have to diet, right? Like, we don't have to do this. Like, you don't have to do this. And she just looked at me like, I don't know how to live not trying to improve my weight. Like being in that wrestle. Like, we don't know how to just, we are either on or off the wagon. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to just be on the road, like, just, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, I don't know how not to. And I was like, easy. You just don't. And then it was, you know, it was a whole nother conversation, but it's like, we do not have to perpetually be trying to perfect ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's not what we were called here to do. I mean, that's just not. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be the best version of yourself. But again, why, mm-hmm. why? And then how's that working for you? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, Dr. Phil nailed it, because it's like, you know, really, but how's that working for you? Because if it's not working out for you, then, like, let's change it. And being honest that, and you know, too, and I look at, particularly in the sport that we enjoy, which is like weight training and CrossFit and all that, there are other women who come and they're like, oh God, do I have to do what you do? I'm like, absolutely not. Mm. Like, absolutely not. Like, there is no, like, I know I'm intense, but I'm an intense person. So I needed an intense outlet, right? Like, yoga just wouldn't do it for me, but it's personality trait. It's wants and desires, has nothing to do with, because that's the only way to do it. You've got to give up the fantasy of looking, of having both. You have to give up the fantasy of having both, of having your form of health and then the version that you want to look like. You've got to give up the fantasy. So here's something interesting for faith-based people. So in the Bible, in Genesis, I think it's like the second chapter, it's the first time we ever hear about shame ever in the entire Bible. And it's when Adam and Eve done ate the apple, both of them, they both ate it. I know she went first, but they both ate it. And they're hiding behind the bushes and they're naked. And God calls them out and they're ashamed because they're naked. The first instance of shame in the Bible is connected to our naked form, our body. And I believe that women have been chasing, specifically women, but we have been chasing to feel unashamed of the way we look and our physical form ever since. And I almost feel like that is an opportunity, spiritually speaking, to let go of that want or that need and lay that down as like, okay, I may never reach that, but I want what you want for me, which is full health or whole health or whatever that may, you know, sort of look like. And just challenge you to maybe look at it just a little bit differently. Because there's also nothing wrong with wanting to look your best or feel your best, or, you know, it just goes back to those, what's motivating you in that respect.
That is such a brilliant point. And I think that that is another theme that has come up quite a bit, is shame. Shame and where it's all coming from. So, Rebecca, we do want to close it out. This has been such a great episode, and I'm so grateful for you sharing some insight and wisdom. And I actually think that you and I have probably about 10 more episodes in us. I would love to have you back. And I think that our listeners are going to want to talk more about this, to dive in deeper with this. And I want to get a little bit deeper into your journey with fitness, because I know that is something that a lot of women get caught up in, and all of the mind games that come with that, and identity crisis that comes with that. So until then, do you have anything else that you just feel a burning desire to get out, or, you know, maybe one more tip just to help really hone in on what we've talked about today?
No, I would just go back to what I opened with, is just my prayer for everybody is just to learn how to take care of yourself and really, really question what that looks like, and being honest with yourself, and be brave to be honest with yourself. You don't have to be honest with anybody else. Just be honest with yourself about, about some things, and you'll get the clarity that I think we all know, but we just need to say it out loud. And that's when you can start working.
I love that you continue to emphasize, you don't have to be honest with anybody else, but just be honest with yourself, because a lot of times you've got a lot of people trying to pull that out of you, but start with yourself. If you don't admit XYZ mm-hmm. to anybody else, like, just take some time, look into your life and write down some honesty for yourself. So, all right, mm-hmm. that is going to wrap up today's show. If you enjoyed this episode, it would do us such a solid if you would rate and review it. Share this with your friends. This is a powerful episode. So share this episode. Let's keep talking about how to become healthier all the way around as women, and just supporting one another and doing that. So until next time, ladies, y'all be well. Thank you so much for listening today. We hope that you got a lot out of that episode. We have some more powerful episodes coming up. If you are interested in locking arms with us to get this information out and empowering women to get their health back, it really helps us if you will subscribe to this channel, as well as rating and reviewing the show. If you're interested in talking one-on-one about your personal health journey, I'm happy to do that too. You can find me on Instagram at @AllisonHealthCoachNoe. I will put that in the show notes, as well as my email address, wholestoryhealth@gmail.com. You guys have a great day. We will see y'all next time. That's a wrap for this one.